When you put it into cultivation, it becomes different.
And one wonderful thing, Brother Teo, is that I found that even when you talked about the three turnings,
yeah, it's different now.
When my foot was bad, how many years ago? You already told me.
Correct.
And I said, what, man, this thing going on like this? So now I ask some of these people, you know, who even do stars and all that,
they cannot understand.
They cannot understand at all.
They can't even explain to you. Yeah.
The first turning is so important.
Yes. Listening. Yes.
But they never understood that. That will help them leapfrog very quickly because they got more than the rest of us.
Correct.
Thanks so much.
Sadhu. Yeah, rejoice with your good understanding. Sadhu. So nice to see you. It's a long time, So nice to have you around. Q&A session will be more interesting.
Offline.
Yeah, definitely. So today's five agree or for my mind, like you mentioned, will be very interesting and very important.
I think this
is fundamental to the understanding of the teaching. Yeah, because the first sermon of the Buddha, Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, he expounded the Four Noble Truths when he turned it three times. Then the first Noble Truth, when he expounded it, the first turning, second turning, and the third turning, he has the final summary. In short, it is attachment to the five aggregate of form and mind via delusion that I call dukkha. And that is a very powerful definition. So if you cannot understand the five aggregate, you cannot put it to test. How can you put it to test? The five aggregate, the Buddha said, if you attach and cling due to sakyadity or self-delusion, then the resultant is suffering, dukkha. So you have to understand the five, and I realize hardly anybody understand the two aspects. No book write about it. They mention the five aggregate. They mention the five names, Pali words, and the English equivalent, but they can't go in and explain to you what the five aggregate of form and mind, especially the second aspect. I haven't, until today, I haven't seen anybody wrote any book about it.
Even when I listen to what you said about the seeing is just the seeing.
Yeah, that one very beautiful.
That is the crux of it all.
Because if we don't detach,
we will never understand.
It is just the pure direct seeing is not easy. You need to have the ability of mindfulness. Very good.
Not so, perfect yet, but getting there, because like you said, if it's just the seeing before the
knowing,
sanya comes
before
in,
the knowing, yeah, sanya comes in.
The knowing comes in.
Yeah, very
and
good.
Just know. And yeah. Then,
Correct.
Monkey mind from going out.
Yeah, from proliferating.
It's not the same as the investigation.
Yeah, very different.
Of enlightenment.
Very
I
different.
Get caught there.
We have to start already. Thank you so much. Now it's 3:30. Okay, we have to start that class. A very good afternoon to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. So today is the 21st of March, Sunday class. The year is 2021. So today we have Sister Chui joining us. So it will be interesting. And she told us just now in the pre-discussion that this topic of today, the five aggregates of form and mind, will be very important and very interesting. It's very true. Because she can now appreciate what these teachings are. Then especially the video I sent it out to you all. The difference between awareness and consciousness. You all should listen to that. That is the basis of cultivation. When you understand that, then you develop the cultivation, you penetrate very fast. You can appreciate and understand what I share. Today's class will be based on a new book. So this topic is the five aggregates of form and mind. It's a very important topic. This is based on the transcript of the record, the talk given by me in the year 2005, 17 March. That was almost 16 years ago. That was a few months after I was first invited to come out to share the Dhamma, the teachings by Sister Yun Chan. So during that time, our civilization hasn't become so sophisticated. There were no smartphones, there were no WhatsApp and all those things, even the video. Even during that time, I think Microsoft just come out with the Microsoft Words and all those things. So it was still very new, very, I should say, relatively compared to now, not so advanced. So I remember when they did the transcript for this talk of mine, because they find it very interesting and yet very difficult to understand. So somebody volunteered and did a transcript. So when the transcript came out, you just have it typed out. So when it was typed out, we didn't really save it in a soft copy. So at that time, we only had the hard copy without the soft copy. Then many years later, I recall this particular sharing. Then I started telling people about this sharing in this book. But not many people can understand. So I was looking for the notes. Then I found it, one A4 size type out transcript. Then I checked with one of the KMA. I say, if I give you this, can you scan it and convert it to a soft copy? Oh, he said can. So he did it. Then I read through the whole thing and I decided to print it out into a book form. That's how it came about. Of course, I also did a little bit of editing to make the flow of language smoother, as advised by Sister Chui. Today, Sister Chui is also among us, so it will be very interesting. And because of Chui's very good feedback and comment, I was able to actually improve the flow of language, the editorial flow of language later on in the later books. So since this book, I want to do it. It was the year January 2019, as you can see from the book. So January 2019 was the second edition. It was also reprinted, there was a set reprinted in December 2018. Yeah, mine is December 2018. A few months earlier, 2 months later, then this edition came about. Okay, anyway, that is the introduction. So I will now go into the sharing so that you can understand how this topic come about. The content page, as you can see, we have preface, acknowledgement, five aggregates of form and mind, the proper, we go into it. Then the three turnings of the four noble truth that give rise to the three types of corresponding wisdom, Sutamaya Panya, Chintamaya Panya, and Bhavana Maya Panya. Then 3.2 is very interesting. What is a phenomenon? 3.3 is seeing the unreality of form and mind, means to see beyond form, beyond mind. Then 3.4, we have the Pancha Niyamas, the five universal order of nature. All these are very important understanding. Then the last section is, of course, Q&A, question and answer. So the Q&A part is quite long, quite long. So now I go into it. We will skip the biography. You all can go back and read yourself, the biography. Okay. Preface. It is Brother Teo's sincere wish that Dharma friends, spiritual practitioners, seekers of truth and cultivators of the way will be able to make use of this Dharma transcript note to develop a better understanding of the Buddha Dharma as taught by the Buddha, so that they may progress along the path of Dharma to become more virtuous, nobler, and wiser human beings, so that they can be a blessing to all of humanity and to the world. These notes were compiled based on the transcript of the recording of the Dharma talk dated 17th of March 2005. In this edition, some editorial amendments have been adopted without distracting from the essence of the talk. With this, it is hoped that reader can better understand the true meaning and intent of this transcript. To get a copy of the ebook, you can log into our brotherteo.com website. Go to the section on repository of Dharma material, or you may just Google Brother Teo's Kayanamita, a repository of Dharma material, to view them under repository. So after that, you can go to publication and notes. Then under publication, you can find this book. Acknowledgement. Is the donor's sincere intent that this Dharma transcript notes be given free to those who are interested and have the affinity to receive them? I would like to take this opportunity to thank and rejoice in the generosity and wholesomeness of all Dharma friends and Kayamita who had donated and helped in the transcription, editing, publishing, etc., to make this free distribution of Dana, Dharma Dana possible. So this book, like all my other transcript book, and also the sharing of the Dharma material, whatever course that we use, we only allow one particular fund to do this donation. We call it the Kayanamita funds. And these Kayamita funds are donation through generosity and through offering by sincere practitioner and devotees who have the faith in the teaching and who wants to be a part of our Kayamita shape. So the bulk of the transcript cost is in the printing part. The rest are volunteer service, and I think Kayamitas, they just volunteer and offer their free service. So we only use the Kayamita fund for the cost of the printing. Then we also seek Kayamita to help us distribute this to Kayamitas, and at the same time to those who have affinity with us and have affinity with the Triple Gem to receive this teaching. So that is the important aspect of the Kayamita fund. Because you get to do this type of wholesomeness and parami. And this is the intent of the setting up of the Kayamita fund when I first came out to give the Dharma sharing. Because for me, in order for Kayamita to benefit and progress, I find it very important to have a Kayamita fund so that all this wholesomeness can come back to benefit the Kayamitas, so that it can help them progress along the path of Dhamma. So with that intent, the Kayamita fund was set up And initially, very few people understand its beauty and its potency until much later when they start to see the effect of this Kayamita fund. And when the Kayamita force starts to move because of this Kayamita fund, the wholesomeness contributed by this Kayamita funds. So this Kayamita fund will get to perform most of the wholesomeness that we do, apart from printing of my transcript, Dhamma books and all those things. We also make use of Kayamita funds to make offerings to charity, to partake in wholesomeness of our own spiritual trip, our own retreats, and whatever appropriate and wholesome spiritual activities. Sometimes we also make donation and offerings to way place that develop a lot of wholesomeness, especially to Sampo Temple, where we used to have our annual meditation retreat. Most of the time it's about 8 days or 9 days, but at times it was also done in 5 days because of the election. One of the sessions was election. We had to cut short and come back. So during this spiritual activity or even spiritual trip, we will donate a sum of money from Kayamita Fund to the common pool, so that whatever the common pool does during this retreat or spiritual trip, Kayamita Fund will get to benefit. So all these are very wholesome. Okay, now we go back to the book, the sharing, and we can continue with the sharing. Special thanks should also be accorded to all those who have helped edited and improve the flow of this book without changing the meaning of the text. And that is also the reason for the second edition. Special thanks should also be accorded to Brother Tew, who had taken the initiative to help convert the earlier hard copy of the transcript into PDF into soft copy format for my subsequent editing, thereby enabling the reprinting of this Dhamma transcript book on the 5 aggregates of form and mind. By the power of this wholesomeness, may all beings be well and happy, free from all mental and physical suffering and danger. And may there be love, peace, and joy deep within their hearts. And may it also pave the way for there to be causes and conditions for all Dhamma friends who have donated or helped out in one way or other to realize their good and noble wishes or aspiration soon as possible. With metta, always. Brother Theo. So this was dated 31st Jan 2009. So the heading is Dhamma discussion. Well, when I started, I set 3 conditions. All my sharing are Dhamma discussion. We are there to discuss the Dhamma so that there is no authority over anybody. Dhamma discussion means we discuss Dhamma topic. We respect each other for our individual understanding. Then we will avoid trying to be right or to develop any unnecessary argument that can most of the time lead to misunderstanding, conflict, and all those unhealthy situations. That's the reason why I have these 3 conditions. So Dhamma discussion is no authority. Then no right, no wrong. We are here to share the Dhamma understanding with mutual respect for our individual understanding. And the 3rd condition is to make use of whatever that is useful, helpful, to progress along the path of Dhamma. If you don't understand, have an open mind. If you can develop the understanding, rejoice that you can make use of any of the things shared to progress along the path of Dhamma and to cultivate diligently, then use it. So that was the basis. Huh? That's why it's called Dhamma discussion. By, of course, I lead the Dhamma discussion by Brother Teo at Selangor Vipassana Center. Selangor Buddhist Vipassana Meditation Center. So SBVMS is Selangor Buddhist Vipassana Meditation Center or Society. Sorry. On the 17th of March 2005. I remember that time they used to rent this temporary center, the third floor, I remember, of a shop lot somewhere in section 17, above Canaan restaurant, the Banana Leaf Canaan restaurant. So the owner of this restaurant is also very, very good and very nice to us. They actually like us to be there. And I was told they rent it to Selangor Buddhist Vipassana very cheap. The rental was very cheap, if I'm not wrong. It's only about 500 a month now. Then they realized when we were there, the energy, everything was very good. And the activity we hold were very good. And they never give us problem. We had to go through a side staircase, a door, where the business is operating there. So we were go up there every Saturday. I remember the time was a Saturday class. So because of that, this book came about. In fact, during that time, there were many transcripts. But I managed to do up this one because the rest, I think, we did cover subsequently, so no need to do them because to do them is a lot of work. But this five aggregate is worth the effort to do because it is a teaching that people need, cultivator, especially Buddhist Dhamma practitioner. You need to understand this topic. When you understand this topic, you progress very fast. Okay, now we go into the topic proper. The five aggregates of form and mind. A very good evening to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. Tonight's topic is a continuation of our last session, which is the first sermon, like I mentioned before we start, as taught by the Buddha. Tonight, we are going to discuss an important aspect of his teaching, the second turning of the first noble truth. Just to recap, I was surprised what we discussed in the last session. We discussed the first sermon, the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, as taught by the Buddha. This sermon is very important because in this first sermon, the Buddha delivered immediately. This sermon. This sermon is very important. Let me pause there. Because it is the first sermon the Buddha delivered immediately after his enlightenment. So this is the correct phrasing. So I read again. This sermon is very important. Then we have to pause. Because it is the first sermon the Buddha delivered immediately after his enlightenment. He went to meet up with the five ascetics that were with him early on. At first, they were quite skeptical about his claim of enlightenment. On approaching them, he explained to them this very important sutta so that there would be no more doubt that he was already fully enlightened. He advised them to avoid the two extremes of self-mortification and sensual indulgence. And this is very important. So after that, he said, you have to avoid this extreme, the two extremes, to cultivate the middle path or the Noble Eightfold Path, which we had discussed earlier. During that time, I covered the Noble Eightfold Path earlier. Then 3.1, the three turnings of the Four Noble Truths that leads to the three types of corresponding wisdom, Sutamaya Panya, Chintamaya Panya, and Bhavana Maya Panya. After that, he proclaimed the Four Noble Truths and turned it three times. Because there are three or four truths and three turnings, hence a total of 12 aspects. And these 12 aspects are very important because according to the Buddha, unless he himself had understood the four turnings, the four noble truths in its 12 aspects, he cannot proclaim himself to be the Sama Sambuddha. I will read to you his actual words. In his first proclamation of the Dhamma addressing the five ascetics, the Buddha proclaimed, "So long as my knowledge and vision of the reality regarding this Four Noble Truths in its three turnings or three phases and its 12 modes or aspects are not fully clear to me, I do not proclaim to have attained the incomparable supreme enlightenment in the world. But when my knowledge and vision of the reality regarding this Four Noble Truths and its three turnings are clear to me, I then proclaim to have won the incomparable supreme enlightenment in this world." So just imagine, even the Buddha, the fully enlightened one, emphasized strongly on the understanding of this Four Noble Truths and its three turnings. What more for us living beings? What we have done was we had discussed the first turning of the Four Noble Truths as proclamation of the Buddha. He proclaimed birth, old age, sickness and death are suffering, and to be separated from loved one is also dukkha or suffering. To be with people whom we don't like is also dukkha or suffering. Not able to get what one desires is also dukkha. Then there is also the final summary, which summarizes all of the first seven types of dukkha. He said, in short, it is this clinging, grasping, or attachment to this five aggregate of form and mind that leads to suffering or dukkha. So the final suffering, as final summary, is very important. The first seven reality of birth and death means birth, old age, sickness and death, to be separated from all loved ones, to be with people whom we don't like, and not able to get what one desire leads to suffering or dukkha. These are relatively easy to comprehend. But then why did the Buddha summarize in his final summary by saying, in short, it is the five aggregates of grasping or clinging, born of self-delusion, that I call dukkha. And this is the reason why you have to understand the five aggregates of form and mind. Otherwise, you cannot understand why he say that. In order to put it to test, in order to investigate into it, first, you must know what this five aggregate form and mind is. Otherwise, how can you put it to test? How can you try to find out whether attachment or clinging to them lead to suffering? So that's the reason why this topic comes about. This is the topic we are going to discuss in detail tonight. Understanding this five aggregate of form and mind is very important. It will lead to true realization and enlightenment. This is very true. If you don't understand this, you cannot awaken. Regarding the three turnings, I will just summarize the reason why the Buddha turned it three times. In the first turning, he proclaimed the truth, just as what he had just done. After he had proclaimed the truth, upon hearing the truth, certain people who already had the karmic past or condition behind them can then become enlightened or awakened. It is like the case of Venerable Kondanya. Before the Buddha even finished the first sermon, Kondanya was already a Sotapan, the first stage of sainthood. He had already develop enlightenment to the truth. Likewise, with Venerable Sariputta, who just inquired from Venerable Asaji, one of the five ascetics, on what his teacher had taught him. Venerable Asaji just mentioned two very simple verses, and Venerable Sariputta was enlightened to the truth. So this proclamation of truth is very powerful. And the Buddha explained this in certain part of his sutta. He said, under Sutta Mayapanya, true hearing of the truth, wisdom leading to enlightenment can arise. Sutta Mayapanya means upon hearing of the sutta. And what is a sutta? The suttas are the discourses of the Buddha. A type of wisdom can arise. During the Buddha's time, there were many incidents of such happening. Then in the second turning, he said, this noble truth of dukkha is to be understood. Listen to his word. The key word is, it is to be understood. You have to understand it clearly. If you cannot understand this noble truth of dukkha clearly, it will be very difficult for you to understand your form and mind, and also very difficult for you to understand all the subsequent teachings or truth that the Buddha had taught. That is the reason why you should not underestimate the importance of the first noble truth. It may sound very simple after we have heard what the Buddha said, but does it impact upon you? How this truth impacts upon you is very important. That is, upon your first hearing of this truth, and subsequently after you have heard it, does it have any impact on you? When the Buddha mentioned that this truth needs to be understood, he meant you need to reflect on it and contemplate on this truth that he had proclaimed. We should ponder, why did the Buddha said that? Through contemplation and reflection on those truths as proclaimed by the Buddha, and put forth those truths and opening them up for discussion, like what we are doing now at this Dhamma discussion class, you will be able to receive another level of understanding or wisdom, which the Buddha termed Cintamayapanya. According to the Buddha, Cintamayapanya is a type of wisdom born of constant contemplation and reflection on the truth that has been proclaimed. When you do the contemplation properly, understanding will arise, wisdom will arise. Even nowadays, through Dhamma discussion, or when you are listening to the Dhamma talk, when there is a keen audience with the right condition, truth or wisdom can arise. Then in the third turning, he said, this first noble truth of dukkha has already been understood. The reason he said it has already been understood is because that is the realization path. And it is equivalent to wisdom born of bhavana, bhavana mayapanya, which is wisdom born of the meditative training or bhavana. So bhavana is the meditative training to develop wisdom through the meditative practice or cultivation. If you apply the subsequent meditative practice, let us say through second turning cultivation to develop cintamaya panya, and you still do not have the condition to really penetrate the Dhamma to realize the truth, then you have to do the meditative part, the third turning. He said, finally, through the meditative approach for the third turning, you can also realize the truth to become enlightened, to be liberated, because the third turning is very, very penetrative. It involves the direct seeing. After we had covered that, we discussed what dukkha is. Can you all remember? The first seven types of dukkha and the final summary which we just covered. The Buddha said, in short, is the attachment to the five aggregates of form and mind is dukkha. Then I ask you all, what are these five aggregates of form and mind? Or what these five aggregates of form and mind are? I had discussed it in summary form. Understanding this five aggregate of form and mind is very important in order to develop the full understanding of this first noble truth. That is the reason why the Buddha summarized it that way. What do you mean by this five aggregate form and mind, namarup or namarupa? How does it arise in you? You have to inquire. What is it? What are these five aggregates of form and mind, and how do they arise in you? And why do they bring about suffering when you attach, when you cling? Then why do you cling on to them? Why do you have this attachment towards them? It is because we do not understand what these five aggregates of form and mind are. If you have the understanding, you will know that these five aggregates of form and mind are not real. They are conditioned arising entity. They are not really what you think they are. The understanding of these five aggregates of form and mind can bring about the subsequent unfolding of what we call the realization of the three universal characteristics of nature. The unreality of these five aggregates of form and mind is very important in order to develop the full understanding of the first noble truth. That's why the Buddha summarized it that way. Eh, I thought we had covered all this. Huh?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, okay. The unreality of these five aggregates of form and mind will be clearly exposed, and we will be able to have the understanding if we truly cultivate through the silent mind. So now we come back to meditation. Huh? That's why during the early days, I already mentioned this silent mind. But during that time, I cannot talk too much on this topic because hardly anybody understand. And it was not something that is easily understood. Then what has been properly accepted by cultivator at that time, by the Buddhist community, was totally different. They hardly have any inkling of what the meditative mind is. So to go into detail of what the silent mind is wasting time. So that time I just casually mentioned, I said, if you truly cultivate to the silent mind to see clearly within the moment of its arising and ceasing, without the silent mind, you cannot observe. You cannot have the sensitivity to understand or to witness the arising and passing away of aggregates, the five aggregates of form and mind. Impossible. But that time I don't have the luxury of time to explain because people are not ready. That was 16 years ago. Only until recently. I will read on and maybe now it will stand out more clearly. I will explain to you again what this five aggregate of form and mind is. You all have to listen. Eh? This is the beginning of the teaching of the five aggregates of form and mind. First, we have to ask ourselves, what did the Buddha mean by nama rupa? Nama rupa can be understood in two ways. There are two aspects to it. The first aspect is seeing it as a living being. As a living being, for our case, we are a human being. We have a physical body, which we call it a physical form. Then we have a mind. And this mind has four aspects or aggregate. That's why we have a form and mind. Add together the five aggregates of form and mind to make us a living being. For our case, it's the human being. Our body is the form aggregate, or in Pali it's called rupa, rupakanda, the form aggregate. Then the four aggregates of mind are very important. You want to develop a very good and easy understanding of these four aggregates of mind. You will have to ask yourself, what can your mind do? Do you remember what we had discussed before? What is the first aggregate of mind? What can your mind do? You can feel, isn't it? The aggregates of feeling is there. Secondly, the mind can perceive and know things. Whatever has been perceived can be known. The power of perception is also part of the ability of the mind. So we have two, feeling and perception. Then what is the third aggregate? This part is very important. It is called Sankara in Pali. There are four equivalent English words used to explain Sankara. All this combined will still not fully explain what Sankara is. According to the text translation, four words are used to explain these aggregates of Sankara. The first word they use is mental activity, which are your mental thinking, planning, scheming, etc. Then there is this mental volition or mental intention. Do you know what volition is? This is the mental intention behind. Then there is this mental states, which are your mind states. There are many types of mind states. They include your moods, your emotion, and your various state of mind, etc., which arises after sense or activity or sense contact. The last term is mental formation. Your mind can create formation or images within your brain. Your brain is one of the organs that give rise to condition for mental formation to arise. That is why all of your perception has this mental formation within your mind. There is this image there. What else can your mind do? Yes, it can give rise to consciousness. In Pali, it's called Vijnana, which is the last aggregate of mind. Your sense organ assists you to trigger off their respective sense door consciousness. Your eye can give rise to seeing consciousness. Your ear, your nose, your tongue, your bodily tactile or touch sensation, and your thinking mind. All this six sense door consciousness will arise within you if there are conditions for the mind to come into contact together with the sense data. Then the respective and their respective sense organ, and then it will be triggered. When these three things come together through contact, they trigger off the appropriate sense door consciousness. You were given an analogy in the last session. For those who are not present, for those who are not familiar, this analogy will help you understand what consciousness is, because the term is a bit new, and for those who do not really follow the Buddhist teaching, understanding consciousness is not that easy. So I will use a physics experiment analogy to explain it so that it is easy for you to understand. We have a battery, a bulb, and a switch. When these three things are in order, the battery functioning with the connection in the correct polarity, the bulb in its functional state, and there is a switch. Upon turning on the switch, the light bulb lights up. Our sense door consciousness is more or less exactly the same. The sense data enter our sense door. If it's seeing that it is external form, which are the color, shape, and form, that enters the eyes field, which is the sense organ. Then together with your mind's contact, it triggers off seeing consciousness. And when seeing consciousness arises, you have to develop the understanding of what this thing is, what this thing is all about. Because together with that consciousness, the five aggregate of form and mind also arise. So within every consciousness that arises, there is the content of consciousness. This consciousness and its content have been summarized by the Buddha as the five aggregates of form and mind, or what we call the thought. And there are certain content of consciousness that are universal to all consciousness. There is this so-called seven universal, which are common to all consciousness. First, there must be contact. Then there must be feeling. There must be perception. Then there are four more. But these first three are the most important. Contact, condition, feeling, followed by perception. So if you really want to understand form and mind, you need to really understand how consciousness arises. Then there is also sankhara. We have to come back to sankhara, because according to the Buddha's teaching, there are 52 mind states that we classify them under the term sankhara. So these 52 mind states, which we classify as sankhara, they include the first two aggregates of feeling, or vedana and sanya, feeling and perception. And because we cover these two, the four aggregates of mind are only sankhara and consciousness. That is, sankhara is the content of consciousness, or sankhara is everything that the mind can do, is sankhara. So if you understand sankhara, you will understand the mind very well, which is very true. That's why without mindfulness, you cannot see this, because this movement is very fast because of human beings' conditioning. The memory, the views, the opinion, the habitual tendency, the conditioning, they happen very fast. So if you understand sankhara and you can see it clearly with your mindfulness, you will understand mind very well. You will understand who you are, what you are. Then during that time, I have to go slowly. That's why I ask that up to this point, is it clear? Can you all follow? If you cannot follow, please let me know, because this part is not easy to understand. During that time, I can tell you, when I was sharing this, I looked at most of them, they were like blur. They I cannot follow. They don't know what this thing is, because this is not taught, hardly taught. Not taught in the traditional Theravada tradition way, or even the Mahayana tradition way. But they were very surprised when I bring it up to them, because this topic, the five aggregate of form and mind, is indeed mentioned in the teaching, the Theravada teaching, Upadana Khandas, but nobody can really explain it. So it was like something very new, something very alien to them. So because of that, I need to slow things down, and I need to repeat them many, many, many times. I think a lot of Kayamita knew, especially Yun Chan, the founder, the early batch. I keep on asking him, why you keep on repeating the Four Noble Truths, the Three Turning, and the Five Aggregates of Form. Not until much, much later only she came to understand the significance and importance. Because my nature knew it has not gone in. Otherwise, what I teach is very easy. You can follow very easily. And because they fail to penetrate these five aggregates of form and mind and develop the understanding, so it was not easy. Now we have to inquire further. to develop a deeper understanding of these 5 years of form and mind. Why did the Buddha say it is your attachment or clinging or craving and grasping to these 5 aggregates of form and mind that leads to dukkha or suffering? You have to ask yourself why. Anybody want to try, or any one of you want to try? Why did the Buddha say that? Yes. So somebody replied, actually, that is one of the characteristics. That is very good. They have these characteristics of impermanence. What else? The non-self nature will also arise if you understand what impermanence is all about. Means for those who can see impermanence, they will straight away understand it is not a permanent, unchanging entity. That's why it is non-self, not real, not what you think. You cannot cling, you cannot hold, you cannot grasp to it and say, this is me, this is I, because it is impermanent, non-self. So how can it be you? It keep on changing. The underlying condition, it keep on evolving and moving. And who are you? What are you? The arising and the ceasing. When you see impermanence clearly, non-self or anatta nature or empty nature existence is more or less automatic. This is very true. Huh? Because it is of the nature to arise, exist and pass away. Everything that arise, exists and pass away due to conditions. We are living in a conditioned world. They do not have a nature of their own because they are conditioned arising entity. Because they are conditioned arising, they cannot be a permanent, unchanging entity as their existence are dependent on condition. They arise when conditions are there. So these conditions are the conditions that support them, support their arising. And they will continue to exist and sustain themselves accordingly. When the condition behind their existence ceases to be, that phenomenon will also cease to be. So this one you have to reflect, contemplate, and silence your mind to see clearly. Otherwise you cannot understand. Impermanent. You see the constant appearing and disappearing, arising and passing away, condition arising, causal phenomenon, all of the movement, all of the mental shift or activity. You have to silence your mind to see their movement. It's like you silence your mind to see nature. Yeah? You look at a tree, a plant, the flow of nature. So all this, when you're silent, you can be with that movement, with that phenomenon. This is specific phenomenal awareness. You are just aware. Then if you want to know, if you want to appreciate, then you start to perceive it. Perceive it. Yeah. Then you do not go and continue with the thinking. Perceive, aware. Perceive, aware. That's how you observe. That's how you see. Then when you perceive, you see the clarity of what you perceive. Then you don't go and think and create proliferation of thinking or thought process. It's just like you silence your mind to meditate, aware, finish. Then continue to let the awareness continue. So that specific phenomenal awareness will follow the phenomenon. There is no perception, no labeling, nothing. But if you want to know clearly, you can perceive it. But the moment you perceive, you have to be with the flow. Otherwise, that perception is dead, rigid. But if you are looking at something that is not moving, then it's very easy. Yeah? Like you look at the house, the microphone. These are static things. More or less static. Doesn't move. And then you can perceive. But after you perceive, if you allow your views, opinion, and conditioning from your memory and your so-called brain, then it will lead to mental proliferation or heedless thinking. You don't have to do that. To live life, you can be very peaceful. You can just silent and be with the moment to appreciate the very pristine beauty and wonders of life. Well, when you are with the moment, means your sati, your awareness nature, your silent mind is with that thing. You are not lost in thought. You are not preoccupied with anything. That joy, that stillness, that silence. There is no mental agitation. There is no mundane mind or sankhara mind state, like fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow, and lament. Don't have all those things. Where your mind does not stir and react to sense experience. You see things as they are, like a baby. That direct see. That's how you're supposed to see. That's how cultivators are supposed to be. That's why most of the time we are peaceful, quiet, joyful. Have the understanding. That's why we smile a lot, we rejoice a lot. Then we silence our mind to be with the moment, to experience everything beautifully. Everything is so pristine, so beautiful. It's always new. We never repeat like a tape recorder or the memory of the habitual tendency and the what they call cocoon or wrong thought, wrong thinking. Because people with problem, depression, they hold on to their problem, they worry about those things, then they keep on repeating those thought process, the wrong thought. Why must I become like that? Why is that fellow doing this to me? How come my life so miserable? So this thing continue to repeat, but they never live life. They never with the silent mind to be with the moment in awareness, to experience things, to experience the beauty and wonders of life. Actually, every moment, every instant, everything is so beautiful, so pristine. Why you hold on to your thought and develop the suffering, the misery, the unhappiness? All this come about where you attach to the five aggregates of form and mind. What are the five aggregates? Your memory is one of them that you accumulate through your perception. Then your emotion, your feeling, your sad feeling, your nice feeling. So all these are your attachments. When you cling to feeling, you suffer. Because feeling arise through nature's condition. When there is condition, things will unfold. It's like now in life. If you are in an aircon room, you feel good in it. The humidity or not so bad in it. The quality of aircon air is so much better than steel air or foul air without aircon in it, without proper ventilation in it. So naturally you will feel good. But then when you are so used to aircon condition, you have attachment. The moment you go somewhere without aircon, you complain. You become unhappy. Means you don't have wisdom. You don't know how to endure. You don't know condition like that, things will be like that. Even if you want aircon or what, wait till you enter your car. If your car has good aircon, of course you like to sit in your car. There is no harm doing that. But do not create suffering through attachment. When there is no condition, as long as you are not in an aircon area or in a car, you have to make do with whatever condition you have. That is understanding. There is no attachment. But when you start to attach, you realize every moment you start to attach to your feeling, to your perception, to your mind states, to your idea, to your whatever views, opinion, you suffer. Then whatever that you become conscious of, you react to it through like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant, you suffer. So that's how I saw this five aggregate of form and mind. Then I realize what this is. That's why I can explain it to you now. Then when I live life, I was silent, aware. My mindfulness was very good. That's why I can see all my mental movement, mental states during the early day, why I was conditioned into those state. How come fear arise, unhappiness arise, the lack of joy, the lack of understanding. All this is because I cannot understand the five aggregate of form in my mind. I cannot see them. I cannot silence my mind to observe the movement. But when I silence my mind to observe the movement, then I realize, hey, thing is just the way it is, like the Buddha said. Condition like that, things will be like that. So when I understand that, when I accept that reality, I realize there is peace. I don't have to reason. I don't have to analyze. I don't have to ask questions like why. There is no such thing. Everything is just the way it is, like the Buddha said. Condition like that, things will be like that. Whatever that arise, there are causes and conditions behind. So it becomes so clear to me, so beautiful. That's why my nature after 1989, I live life differently. I saw things differently. I understand things differently. And everything becomes so beautiful, so pristine. That's how Dhamma has the ability to transform the individual. But it's not easy to understand this type of Dhamma, because this type of Dhamma needs the meditative mind, the silent mind, the sati behind, the awareness. Without that, you can't. Theory cannot free you. Idea and concept, knowledge cannot free you. So this is what the teaching is all about. Right? We go back to the notes, then I move on. I have to move faster a bit. Here is 4:05 already. Okay. Can you all follow? What are the other reasons? How does it cause you to cling? Why is it that when these five degrees of form and mind arise, they cause clinging? Why? Why did the Buddha say it's grasping aggregate? There is this sensual desire, right? But in the first place, you should ask yourself, how do all this arise and why? That is because you do not understand the five aggregates of form and mind as they really are. You think they are very real. That is why you never see, you never really see their unreality and empty nature. To see the unreality of the form aggregate and the unreality of the aggregates of mind leading to clear comprehension or clear understanding of their universal characteristics or impermanence, affliction or suffering, and non-self nature is very important. That is why in the last session, I asked you all those questions. Is your body really you? Are your feeling really you? Are your perception really you? Are your sankhara or mental activity and mental states, your thought process, your other mental activity, etc., are they really you? Are all of this consciousness that arises within you really you? You have to ask yourself all these questions. But these are the things that delude you. That is why they say the self-delusion or sakkarity of form and mind will cause living being to cling and attach, because you do not understand their reality. You think they are so real, especially when you look around the world today. The level of sensuality is so strong or so high that it can easily lure and delude living beings. Look at the multimedia world. Look at all the things you can have, the food paradise, the fashion, the automobile world, the modern musical instrument inside your studio and home theater, even the TV and the computers nowadays, the multimedia capability of social media and the entertainment industry, etc. Project such high level of sensuality, and they can really lure you and draw your senses. Draw living beings into thinking that they are very interesting, they are very nice, and they are very real. Living beings can fight with others. Oh, sorry, fight for them and kill others for them. They can do anything just to own and possess them, or just to experience them. The key to understanding all this is to understand that you sorry, that your five aggregate of form and mind are unreal, not real. They are not what you think. They are not what you think they are. And in order to truly understand that, you need to penetrate the three universal characteristics of this five aggregate of form and mind. It means seeing is impermanence, like what Casey said, and its non-self or afflicting characteristic. Once you are able to see clearly with direct seeing and the silent mind, this universal characteristic, clinging will not arise. And when you have penetrative understanding, or when you have penetrated this truth and understood them for what they are, clinging to the five aggregates of form and mind can never arise anymore. In fact, you have already understood them for what they are. So this completes the third turning of the first noble truth. Okay. Okay. Maybe we stop here. What is a phenomena? We will have our meditation first. So now we will pause for 45 minutes of silent inner awareness meditation. Okay. So we are off the light now. You can start your meditation immediately. So just relax body and mind, completely relax, silent everything, and maintain awareness to stabilize your awareness nature, to realize your silent mind, your true mind. Allow your mundane mind to slow down, settle down, and cease, so that you can realize your true mind. You will experience a shift in consciousness leading to the silent within. Okay, page 13. What is a phenomena? This one is very important. This understanding will let you understand mind better. So I will continue the sharing. The other thing that I need you to understand is this word, the phenomena. Or I read to you the actual wording. The other thing that I need to explain is what is a phenomena. This term is very important. In order to understand the five aggregate of form and mind, you need to understand what these five aggregate of form and mind are. We have already covered that. As a human being, we have a body and a mind. That is why the four aggregates of mind combine with the physical body. You have the five aggregates of form and mind. So that is the first aspect as a human being. Always remember, every living being, every human being, they have a five aggregates of form and mind. Where there is a physical body, the physical form, rupa. Then there is a mind, which has four aggregates. The mind can feel, perceive, give rise to activity of mind, thinking, mental states, mental intention, mental volition, sankhara activity, the content of consciousness. Then finally, the mind can also become conscious. Conscious of what you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, what you tactile feel and think. So consciousness is one of the aggregates of mind. So this four plus the form give rise to the five aggregate of form and mind. There is a second aspect. So this second aspect, you have to listen. The second aspect of the understanding is more important. Yeah, this is related to the twirling, the Paticchasamuppada teaching, how you function as a human being. The second aspect is the mental aspect. Whenever sense experience arises, we have already said there are three things that trigger it. So we already have the understanding. You need the three conditions to trigger off sense consciousness. You need contact. You need the sense organ, which is functioning. Then you need the sense data. So sense data, sense contact, and also the organ, these three, they must come together for it to trigger off the sense door consciousness. So this part is very important. Sense organ, sense data, and the mind coming together to make contact, trigger off the respective sense door consciousness. When sense door consciousness arises, the whole consciousness and its content is the five aggregates of form and mind, or we call it the thought. How does the form enter the mind? As we all know, in the last session, I think Casey and Brother Lim managed to get the answer. So the form, which is external form or mental form, how does that mental form or external form appear in the mind? We already concluded that the mind is the knowing element. The rupa does not have a mind. It does not have any knowing. So whatever that mind knows will be the form, the rupa. So how does this knowing comes about? Can you recall? It is through your sense perception, because you can perceive things. To know something, you need to perceive it, just like the fan, the TV, the aircon, living beings, or whatever you come to perceive through your senses, like seeing consciousness, hearing consciousness, smell, taste, tactile, and thought consciousness. If you perceive it, it means the knowing comes from there, means that perception brings in the knowing. Just like sound and hearing and the perception of vibration and voices, etc. Even when somebody is opening a door, through that sound, you will know through your perception that somebody is trying to open the door or break into the house. So the power of perception is linked to your sixth sense door. You have eyes. And whenever you see, you will perceive what you see within your seeing consciousness. Likewise for hearing, your smell, your taste, your touch, and your thought process. Perception is the one that brings the external form into the mind. This one you have to pay attention. That's why I bold the wordings. Perception is the aggregate, sanya aggregate, that brings the external form into your mind. It transfers the rupa of the external world or external form into your mind. So this particular understanding of form and mind is more important than the first aspect of understanding, because you have to deal with this second aspect in the dwelling or the paticca samuppada teaching as taught by the Buddha. The meditation in our daily life and learn how to see this form and mind. So daily mindfulness involves the second aspect of the five aggregates of form and mind. This second aspect are the mental five aggregates of form and mind. So the form and mind, the five mental aggregates arise. You will be able to see clearly in the meditation or in your daily life how this form and mind or the five mental aggregates of form and mind arise in you and how they pass away. At every moment of sense door consciousness or arising of this form and mind, there is this contact, there is this feeling aggregate inside, and there is also this perception and your thoughts or sankhara activity, the content of consciousness. You have to learn to see them, and you will also have to learn to see your thoughts and your feelings, how they arise and how they pass away, and how they condition each other to make you attach and cling on to the five aggregates of form and mind through your mental self-delusion, sakkayaditti. When feeling arise, when you do not have the right view and the clear understanding of how these feelings are going to condition you, then you will give rise to delusion or attachment you will attach. Because when feeling arise, there are normally three types of feeling. It's either pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral feeling. If you do not have the wisdom or the right understanding, when any of these feelings arise, you will cling. Because pleasant feeling is positive craving or sensual desire. There will arise a positive attachment or clinging to that sense experience. If it's a negative, unpleasant feeling, it is negative craving, and aversion or dislike will arise, or what they call ill will. And you want to push it away. As for neutral feeling, if you are not careful, if you do not have the wisdom and the right understanding to arise the equanimity or upekkha mind, to really understand what neutral feeling is, it can give rise to indifference. This is normally brought about by what they call delusion, self-delusion, because you do not understand what it is. The feeling just arises. To you, it is as though it does not bother you. It is neither pleasant nor unpleasant because it is not related to you. But there is an element of delusion because you do not have the wisdom to understand it for what it is. So when the neutral feeling arises, it can also affect you because you lack wisdom. So this second aspect of the five aggregates of form and mind is very important. Then I had to add on something, which last night I didn't link it because they were not ready. Last time the intention is to bring forth the teaching so that they understand. Then later on as I teach, I came to understand that it is now ready. They are now ready to understand this. That's why in my later teaching, you come to understand how I actually incorporated the understanding, especially when we touch on the four foundation of mindfulness. Because when the Buddha teach the four foundation of mindfulness, there is a foundation that explain Vedana Nupassana, mindfulness of feeling. Inside that teaching, the real understanding stand up. So what the Buddha want you to understand is, when feeling arise, there are three types: pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral feeling. And without wisdom, the yoniso manasikara, the wise attention at the moment of sense experience, you cannot cut at feeling. Feeling will be conditioned into craving straight away. So this craving is either positive or negative initially. So positive craving leads to desire, attachment, positive attachment, or what we call sensual desire. So as we all know, sensual desire is one of the five mental hindrances. So when your mind stir and react and have this sensual desire, it means you already created delusion within your mind. Means you lack the spiritual faculty, you lack sati, you lack the wisdom. Then you cannot understand what is going on. Then you stir your mind. So every of this stirring of mind, your like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant sense experience, are your first two mental hindrances. They are your sensual desire and your ill will. And these two are part of the evil roots of greed and hatred. That's why it brings about negativity of mind state. So when mental hindrance arise, it will hinder your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace and inner calmness. So if throughout the day you react to what you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, what you tactile feel and think, then how are you going to be peaceful? How are you going to be mindful, aware? Because you react and stir your mind and create mental hindrance. And these are the mind state, the sensual desire and the ill will that will draw you away from your silent mind, your mindfulness. That's how it prevents you from entering the meditative state of inner peace and inner calmness. You cannot retain that mind state. You become lost in thought. Then through your anger, your craving, your desire, your pleasant and unpleasant sense experience, your like and dislike, you continuously stir your mind until this mental hindrance become like habitual. You do it so constantly. So when it becomes habitual, throughout the day, you react to sense experience and become heedless. That's why you cannot be peaceful. You cannot meditate. You cannot develop the spiritual faculty. So that is the reason why the Buddha say, if you don't develop mindfulness of feeling, you cannot do anything to your life. You can't cope with life. Because when you go through life, when you live life, your senses are so active. Every moment you have to arise sense door consciousness to perceive what you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, what you tactile feel and think. And this movement is very fast. So without a very stable mindfulness, you cannot cope. You cannot understand. So what the Buddha says is, when feeling arise, you must develop the awareness that feeling has arise. So when feeling arise and it has become sensual desire or positive craving, the Buddha said you must be aware. Aware means what? The mind has stirred. It has moved away from its original state of tranquility, stillness, and pure feeling because of delusion, the lack of understanding. So this stirring of mind, when sensual desire arise, you must be aware. You must be aware that you have become heedless. The mental hindrance has arisen. So similarly, when the opposite sensual desire, which is negative in its aspect, we call it the aversion or dislike or the unpleasant feeling. So when they arise, it's also another mental hindrance. So under Vedana Nupassana, you're supposed to be aware. The moment you are aware, this awareness will let you understand that this mind has stirred. Then you continue to observe why you stir. Why must I stir? Why must I react to sense experience to arise the mental hindrance? Why can't I follow the Buddha's teaching to develop mindfulness to be sensitive so that this feeling can remain as pure feeling? To do that, you must have wisdom. Yoniso manasika. So during the cultivation, a lot of cultivator make the mistake. They thought there is a neutral feeling. Third aspect, neutral feeling. Neither like or dislike. So they thought the sensual desire and ill will not arise. So neutral feeling means my mind is peaceful, equanimity. But there is a danger. Because the third evil root is delusion. So when you have indifference, it is delusion. It's not equanimity, is not upeka. So without wisdom, the feeling of neutral feeling is always indifference because it has nothing to do with you. That's why you do not stir, you are not affected. But then you behave in a negative way where you are indifference to it. It's like, why should I help? He is not related to me. He has nothing to do with me. So this indifference is actually a type of selfishness. You do not observe clearly to see the causes and conditions behind. When there is condition to help, when there is condition to develop wholesomeness, you should, because you are a Dhamma practitioner, you are a cultivator. But when there is no condition, you just let things be. That one is wisdom. That one is understanding. So when it comes to feeling, this is very important. That's why for feeling to remain as pure feeling, you must have wisdom. Otherwise, you can't. So your views, you must straighten your views so that your mind do not react, do not stir. Because our memory is filled with a lot of views, opinion, and conditioning. Even our belief system, our fear, our phobia, our insecurity, or whatever that we accumulate throughout our life, our good and bad experiences. So all this accumulate and become our content of consciousness, or what we call our memory, our brain. So from memory, we accumulate all this, then this one become a problem. That's why in the Mahayana teaching, they say, knowledge bind. When you have too much knowledge, it become a hindrance. It binds you. The meaning is this, memory. Because memory is accumulation of experiences which are just knowledge, not wisdom, not understanding. They accumulate all your fear, phobia, cunningness, deceitfulness, whatever. Even your belief system, your conditioning, your mental habitual tendency, everything, they are all there. So acting according to memory is not acting at all. Well, these are your wrong thought, your deluded thought. Before wisdom goes in, your views, your opinion, your conditioning, your belief system, they are all not born of wisdom. So acting according to memory is just a conditioning. Means that conditioning or belief system or views, your opinion, your habitual tendency, stir your mind and you just act. Like it become habitual, automatically, it just come out. But if you act this way, then the intention behind your action is born of delusion, born of your fear, your phobia, your selfishness, your conditioning. Means you don't have wisdom behind your action. So you have to understand before wisdom come in, your feeling will stir. That's why you cannot cut a feeling. It will condition you into negativity. It will give rise to wrong thought, wrong action, and wrong speech. That's how you become heedless. You cannot cultivate noble eightfold path. Your whole cultivation collapse. So the teaching is very beautiful. Very, very profound. The Buddha said, you have to develop right view. You have to straighten your view. You have to develop wisdom. Without right view, without wisdom, you cannot deal with sense experience. You cannot cope with life. So what you need is cultivation of the first, second turning wisdom, leading to the third turning wisdom. Then you accumulate wisdom, which the Buddha called Yoniso Manasikara. And this will stay with your nature. Then when it is there, it's always there. You don't have to remember. You don't have to commit to memory. Because you have contemplated, reflected, listened to the true Dhamma long enough. Then you have silenced your mind to meditate, to observe, and to develop the understanding and to straighten your view. So once you have done all this, this wisdom will stay with your nature. And your nature is connected to this five aggregate of form and mind. That's why at the moment of sense experience, when it arises, you no longer act according to memory. Where this wisdom will prompt you, straight away it will come up. The Dhamma will come up. Rupang anicang, rupang anatta. Sabbe sangkara anicang, sabbe sangkara dukkang. Then all of the essential Dhamma, the teaching, all surface. Avijja paccaya sankara, sankara paccaya vijnana. All this you must develop the understanding until they are very stable. Then it will spontaneously arise. Then when it arises, you will not deludedly stir your thought, develop the habitual tendency, react to what you see, what you smell, what you taste, what you tactile feel. You will become composed. Your mind will not stir. Most of the time, it will be in equanimity, where you understand what the Buddha teach. Thing is just the way it is. Suchness, ta-ta-ta. Whatever that arise, there are causes and conditions behind. When the causes and conditions is already set, things can never be otherwise. That is the reality. That is the truth. You have to come to terms with that. You have to be at peace with that. Otherwise, your mind will still react. You will want things your way. That's how living beings get into trouble. That's how suffering comes to be. That is what the final summary of the first noble truth is all about. Okay? Okay, I maybe read the next paragraph before we start. Now, before you really develop this understanding, I need you to understand one more thing, because they are all interrelated. You need to understand phenomena. We had discussed it in our last session. I opened up the topic for discussion, but I did not go into detail. The key to understanding mind is the understanding of phenomena. If you cannot understand phenomena clearly, it will not be easy for you to understand mind. So this part, pay attention. Huh? That's why the mind in our book always say, the world is a phenomenal world of consciousness. So this word phenomenal is very important. Created by mind. 一切为心造. So the world is a phenomenal world of consciousness created by mind. That is why it is not real. How real can it be? It's just a phenomenon, a consciousness. It come and it go. But what is it that they call phenomenal world of consciousness? What is your understanding? What is it? Can anyone recall the definition? What is a phenomenon? Ah, very good. So this definition is very important. Huh? After this definition, we will end. Huh? Yeah. So this definition is anything perceivable by the mind is a phenomenon. So anything perceivable by the mind is a phenomenon. This is very important. Eh? Can you all follow? The definition is very important, because from this definition, you will understand mind. You will understand how mind come about. Can every one of us repeat this? Okay, let us repeat this. What is a phenomenon? Anything perceivable by the mind is a phenomenon. So this is very important. Eh? Then after that, I ask them to give example. Can you all give example of a phenomenon? Yes, sound can be perceived. Sound is a phenomenon. Anything that you can see is also perceivable through your eye organ or seeing consciousness. Yeah, your seeing consciousness. They are all phenomena. But a lot of people do not understand. They thought phenomena must be a movement or a flow or something that can cause us to perceive it. But the true meaning of phenomena is very deep and wide. That is, anything that is perceivable by your senses or mind is a phenomenon. Even your taste, your smell, your touch, your sensation, and your thought processes, and whatever mental activity that arise that your mind can perceive is also a phenomenon. That's how we can have three basic phenomena. So you listen, these three basic phenomena is very important. First, we have this physical body, which can give rise to physical phenomena. Like your hand movement is a physical phenomenon. The blinking of your eye, your walking posture, your four posture, standing, sitting, walking, and lying down, etc. All these are manifestations of your physical body, which give rise to physical phenomena. This part regarding physical phenomena, is it clear? Can you follow? Then within your physical body, you really need to understand the reality of this form. Oh yeah, the old book got mistake, that's why they didn't amend. Eh? The old book, make a note. Eh? Yeah. Correct. But this 20181, there is a mistake. That's why we printed the new edition. So now I know why we printed within 2 months, because there was some spelling mistake. Eh? So, okay, then within your physical body, you really need to understand the unreality of the form and this physical phenomena. So this is how the direct see, the wisdom, when they arise, you understand what the Buddha meant by the universal characteristics of impermanent. And because they are impermanent, they are not real, not a permanent unchanging entity. They keep on evolving, dependent on condition they arise, dependent on condition they continue to sustain itself or manifest. And when condition cease to be, they cease to be. So this is how it transforms. Huh? Okay, we stop here. So that next session, I will go through this part again, what is a phenomenon. Then we can learn the remaining balance of phenomenon. We have just touched physical phenomena. We have not gone into mental and nature's phenomena. So all these are very important understanding. And all this understanding, you can never find them in book. Yeah, these are the understanding my nature contemplated, reflected, and developed the understanding. That's why that time when I share, it comes from my own nature's understanding. And I have never been taught about this thing. Or I have never read anywhere in the Dhamma book. People can describe and talk about all this. Of course, they did mention the word physical and mental phenomena. Nature's phenomena is very rare. But they never define what is a phenomena. And they never truly understand why phenomena is very important, how it can be linked to the understanding of the mind. So all these are very, very important. Okay, now we will end. We'll stop here. Then we will open up for meditation reporting, followed by whatever Q&A that you may have.
Rajiv, 我想讲的是, 现在share的 five aggregates for my mind. 我终于开始明白那个 first and second aspect. 以前你一直在讲我一直都 try to understand to
不容易，因为现在你有了实地 your awareness nature 你懂了啊，所以现在就很容易那个 phenomenal form and mind everything
是，对，就是它不容易。 抓我们进去了，对对对，骗不到你。对，好，那个since Sister Chui 很少 join 我们 class， 那我想 nominate Sister Chui 跟我们分享。阿弥陀佛，谢谢。阿弥陀佛
，Chui， are you there？
Yeah。
Chui。
Oh， Alicia。Good。No， thank you so much， Brother Teo。I think。This is not something that will happen overnight because our parami sometimes is not that there yet.
Yes,
so it's
correct.
A cultivation kind of thing. But yeah. I'm so happy to be able to tell you that now I can actually go into that mindfulness and sort of like go inside and
yet
the space between when you have that space when you talk
thought,
about
you
know the five aggregates and all that, you
become very clear. Become
very
clear.
I can see the knowing is just the knowing.
Every moment of perception you just perceive, finish.
It keeps just come go.
Then even the moment of feeling, you can stay there if you want to find out. It does not move. It does not stir. It becomes pure feeling because of the wisdom there. But when you don't have the wisdom, you not only can't be there, it straight away condition you into negativity of feeling, whether pleasant or unpleasant. You straight away react. So now you see the big difference. Before you have sati and the understanding, you are totally heedless. Like the Buddha said, the heedless are as if dead. You cannot cope with life. You don't know what is happening. You just like a auto gear type of reaction, habitual tendency, habitually reacting. So now you have the ability to be aware, to go into that mind, then the space between thought give you the understanding of what that true mind is, the silent mind is. So that one is aware. That's why it can see. the moment of perception, it can be there, then gone. But it moves very fast. So you have to stabilize that. So as you cultivate and go through the cultivation and the training, you develop more and more stability. Then when the stability or the sati is there, you realize the spiritual faculty comes in, take over. Well, your faith becomes stronger. Your faith comes from the understanding that your sati bring forth. Then you start to be able to comprehend the Dhamma, link up everything. Then you can put it to test. You can investigate into it. Then you realize the teaching of the Buddha is so beautiful. Dhammapada verse 1 and 2. Dhammapada verse 183. And all the essential Dhamma that the Buddha mentioned. The mental hindrance, the spiritual faculty, the factors of enlightenment, the three evils. So all this, you will start to develop understanding because of that mindfulness. That's the key. That's the reason why I say without mindfulness, there is no real wisdom, no real awakening. You need to stabilize your mindfulness, especially daily mindfulness and the nature's awareness within the silent mind. If you are most of the time lost in thought, heedless, means you don't have the spiritual faculty. You can be easily swayed and react to sense experience. Not until you have a very stable daily mindfulness, then most of the time you are with your true mind. You are just silent, aware. You perceive, then you move. Then you leave. You leave. And you are less reactive already. Means the sense experience that arise, the normal heedless reaction to sense experience, pleasant, unpleasant, light and dislike, you realize that one has diminished. And finally, more or less like you hardly do it anymore, rooted out. But you have seen them. You have seen the Dhamma. And the Dhamma awaken you. Your condition like that, things will be like that. So you straighten your view. People are just the way they are. Then there are causes and conditions behind everything that arise. Then the Buddha's word become very clear. Like he said, we are all born of all karma. Heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma. We are what we are because of our karma. Then you reflect back, hey, yeah, whatever that arise, like the Buddha said, there are causes and conditions. And since we are born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma, and we are what we are because of our karma, then it has definitely a lot to do with our karma. So we accept. Right view with regards to law of karma, we accept. When I accept, I don't blame people. I don't react anymore. I don't say all those wrong things. I don't react to what happened anymore. I become different. Then I tell myself, if this is karma, I reap what I sow. It's fair, isn't it? There is no such thing as how can that guy do that to me? How can the world be so unfair to me? How can God be like that? No more. That's why you no more complain. You will have the wisdom to accept the reality. Then you ask yourself, what actually happened? If this is karma, what must I do? I must do what I have to do. So I just develop the understanding and move. So I act. I don't react from memory anymore. I act following Noble Eightfold Path, following wisdom as taught by the Buddha, the Dhamma way. So when I act according to wisdom, means all of the yoniso manasikara or wisdom born of the direct seeing and the sati, I start to straighten my view and change the way I live my life. Then I start to be at peace with all things. Then when I understand that, I will apply Noble Eightfold Path. Okay, right view. In regards to law of karma, I accept. Then I do what I have to do. So what must I do? I need to apologize. I apologize. I need to develop the repentance. I do the repentance. Then I vow not to repeat all this wrong thing from now onwards. I vow to keep my precept, to follow the advice of the Buddha, to cultivate wholesomeness, to purify my mind, to meditate, to develop wisdom. Then when I do that, the merits, the blessing, the wholesomeness, all will surface. Because you have followed the advice of the Buddha to avoid all evil. So your karmic nature becomes beautiful. Your life changed. Everything changed. Then after that, over a certain period, maybe 3 months or so, you will have enough parami or wholesomeness or what they call merits for you to do the third thing. You invoke power of merits for causes and conditions for you to recover from whatever that happened, for you to turn around so that your life can return to normal, so that you can become a true cultivator to follow the Dhamma way again. Then you can express your gratitude, your respect, your joy, your contentment, your understanding. Then never go back to the old way, which is heedless living. So all this understanding will surface. That's why you feel so much joy. Actually, you are so different now. Despite all the accidents you go through, despite all the hospitalization, you are so beautiful. And it turned out to be a blessing, this guy, like you told me. You got more time to listen to the Dhamma, to the sharing, and to read the transcript book. And you have progressed well. My nature rejoiced. Sadhu to you. And now you can understand much more than last time.
Brother Theo, can I just add something?
Can you add?
Yeah. I listen to you. I'm in stillness and in calmness.
Sadhu.
And there is no thought.
Sadhu.
I mean, now I talk, of course the thought comes up, but I'm listening to you. There is no thought. The listening is now from the heart.
Yeah, because you are attentive from that true mind, that nature. That's why the listening is from that vibration that go in, and the understanding of it that it can absorb very fast. Like you have no thought. Not only you, quite a number of Kayamita who has progressed, they can do it now.
And on top of that, the awareness is coming out from the heart, going up all
over,
joining up with the consciousness.
Then
it's a freedom, you know.
Yeah.
That I don't have to be attached to, what's this thing that I have to think about?
The phenomenal world has no power over you. It no longer can deceive you into negativity of action, speech, and thought. That is the beauty. That's why that joy comes from there. You see everything clearly. The phenomenal world of consciousness is really an illusion. Well, you know Mandarin. This one will stand out. Then, 如露亦如电,应作如是观. All this surface beautifully. Then you understand. Then after that, your nature will arise. Then from there, the heart will open up. Then more and more things will happen. Then when you meditate after that, the gateway there, it will slowly open. Then when the gateway open, you will move in and transform again. Because that one is for the higher cultivation, the Bodhisattva way and all things. So ability to go to the heart is very important. Like now you are able to go there, you are starting to develop the ability to be aware from there. Then it is from that ability to be aware from there that you go into your nature, the gateway, everything. So the cultivation finally will drop to the heart. Then the awareness at the heart is very important. Until you can stabilize it, then finally silence everything to locate the gateway. And then the whole cultivation will become very clear to you.
Brother Theo, lastly, it is as though there is full absorption. And when you're talking, the what you are saying, the absorption is very strong. It's like you sort of accept it.
Yeah, and it like draw into your nature.
That's
what cultivator is able to. All the great beings' nature, they are ever radiating for the cultivator of the way. So when you have the understanding, you will listen attentively with the faith, sadha, virya. Then that thing will enable you to draw. Your sadha, virya together with the sati, it will draw the spiritual faculty. Because there is joy, there is understanding. Then all this has meaning to you. That's why you are able to do that sadhu to you.
When everybody can do it, if I can do it, everybody can do
just
it.
Just like Putin say, yeah. Because now a lot of Kayamita, they have faith because they realize a lot of people whom they know in the early days, they are ordinary cultivator with nothing special. But finally, when they connect, when they have the condition, they transform. That's why, especially after Pocheng transformed, a lot of people have confidence and faith. Like Pocheng said, I know next to nothing. He said, the first two retreats, he asked a lot of questions. You know, that time she don't know. She admits she don't know. She's very new to all this. That, but the moment she become very serious, dead serious, is before the MCO end of previous year, not last year, when she determined to go all out to cultivate, and she listened attentively to all my sharing, and she followed, you know, word by word, you know, and do, you know. That one really transformed her and changed her. That's why she progressed very fast. Then when she heard that the retreat last year was cancer, not able to hold, she at first was like, that unhappiness was there. Ayo, what a waste, I prepare everything. Then later on, she continued to listen to my Heart Sutra sharing. Then like I mentioned, it turned out to be a blessing in disguise. Because now I no need to rush over the Heart Sutra in 8 days or 9 days retreat. I can slowly do it over a period of 8 months to 9 months. And that one, the sharing becomes so clear to her. And she developed the daily practice at home. And she did it diligently. And she was able to penetrate and realize a lot of beautiful things. She even went into her heart area and the nature opened up. And a lot of things happened in the transformation process. That's why there is so much joy. Like you say, very true. You can do, or almost guarantee everybody can do. So it's not a matter of you have to be born special, you must have special path. Because now the sasana is there. The Buddha sasana is there. The teaching is there. And our nature's consciousness, Kayamita force, they are there. And this is the best window. That's why I call it the golden age, the golden age, the golden opportunity, the best window for cultivation. So this life, with this understanding, if you all develop the faith, the sincerity, then persevere, cultivate, and determine, and make vows and aspiration following the Bodhisattva way, the yellow card, your future cultivation will be sealed, confirmed, guaranteed. So this understanding will follow you life after life whenever you arise, choose to arise or have to come. So all this is the purpose of my nature's mission, this life coming. That's why Maitreya, he make the request in 2008. So now it's year 13. But it has progressed very well. Ever since he mentioned that, things just happen, conditions just arise. That a lot of things become very different. Then I realized I didn't do anything. The people come, the condition come. Those who are supposed to understand and benefit, they all come. That's why the new batch after 2008, these are the people with affinity and condition. And when they come, they really benefit. So sadhu,
sadhu, thank you.
Yeah. Also to Alicia.
Thank you, Alicia.
Yeah. Anything else you want to share, Jay? Since you are here for the first time, many would like to hear from you. Your experience is very good. Yours is almost like Alicia one. Alicia gone through very tough early years of her life. She was in depression for 16 years. Yeah. Yeah, you continue.
It's like as though, you know, when the consciousness and the awareness are one, the space is a lot around you and in you. And you know, and then you are just part of everything, because yeah. when you do the five consciousness, the hearing,
the
consciousness, breathing, all that sort of thing, everything happens all together, and yet you can hear and understand very clearly.
Yeah, so that clarity. That clarity.
Must be the right way, because otherwise you cannot be part of
you cannot be in that state.
Buddha nature you're talking about.
That clarity come from your true mind. Without your true mind, you will be full of thinking, heedless thinking, cluttered with all the emotion, the moods and whatever that stir and condition you. So all this will cloud the nature. Then because of that, the normal putujana who are not in the cultivation, who don't have that ability to have sati or mindfulness to realize their true mind, they cannot have this clarity, this understanding. They cannot see. They totally cannot see. And they don't know what all this thing is. It's just like a blind man. You are really blind to truth. Not blind because they cannot see. They can see, but they don't see truth. They see delusion. They see all phenomena as very real. They attach, they cling, they grasp. Then everything can make them miserable. Small things also can make them miserable. Then to them, because they fail to have the Dhamma understanding, life is like very stressful, very difficult, full of suffering, misery. Like everything doesn't go right and they cannot understand what went wrong because they don't have the understanding of the important nature's law that governs life and existence, especially the law of karma, the law of mind, karma niyama, citta niyama, then the teaching, the truth, dhamma niyama. So all this is the reason why dhamma is so beautiful, the Buddha's teaching is so beautiful. Without the Buddha's teaching, you cannot break free from that delusion. You will be entangled, condition and become so deluded by the phenomenal world of consciousness. So those who have the Dhamma, who cultivate accordingly and have the understanding, they will have a lot of gratitude. They will have a lot of joy. Then they will know, no wonder living beings suffer. It is because of self-delusion, sakkaya ditti, avijja, ignorance. Without that, everybody will know how to live life. When you have the Dhamma, you will know how to choose. You will not be deluded and deceived. But because people don't understand this teaching, that's why in this world, suffering is all. Very few people can come out of it. Even people with other religion, they may have faith. Then when they have faith in their teachings, their religion, they may be able to have the good life because they follow the advice of, like Christianity, the advice of all the wisdom and teachings of Jesus, means the whole embodiment of Jesus' love, compassion, and follow the commandment of the thing. So if you follow those basic things, means you are actually avoiding all evil and do good. But because they don't have the third part, the wisdom part, through meditative awareness, sati, the true mind. So when they confront old age and death, or later part of their life, because they only believe they will take eternal, after they die, they will realize the, what they call it, the kingdom of God, to be with God. So that faith actually maintain their endpoint struggle, like that is the reward they are looking forward to. But when they actually die, they don't know what happened. So that part, a lot of them break down when they confront the reality of life and existence. So only through the Dhamma, the Buddhist teaching, that have the understanding to know that all these are no reality, then there is no attachment, no delusion to grasp and to cling. then the full liberation leading to the cessation of form and mind, the realization of the unconditioned, which is Nibbana, can happen. So without that, it's still based on your belief system, your views, your opinion, and your conditioning, and nobody knows what happened after that. But the one that has the Dhamma, they are very clear. Nothing dies. Only nature, mighty nature, rolling by, dependent originating condition, right? That's why it's a phenomenal world of consciousness, no reality. The empty nature of existence, that profoundness of that understanding liberates the mind. And the mind has to be liberated for it to realize the unconditioned, the cessation leading to the realization of Nibbana. Otherwise, Nibbana cannot be realized. As long as there is any craving, attachment, or mind involved, there is no realization of Nibbana. So all these are very important. So when we look back, we really have a lot of joy. Our gratitude towards our good karma, the great beings, especially Sammasambuddha, who has actually cultivated and sacrificed for so long to develop that perfection to arise this style of teaching. And this style of teaching is really, really very rare and very, very unique and profound, beautiful. Today is very good sharing. Sadhu to Chui and Alicia.
Shall I tell you one last
can
we should all thank you for teaching us some very basic things like straighten your view. I used to think you are just repeating yourself. You know, how can you straighten your view when it's already straight? And actually we didn't know it wasn't quite right. So things like that. Yeah. And then this thing about right effort, you know, determination and then keeping at it. So it's not really about people just doing it for the sake of doing it. You have to do it with some conviction. And that you taught us. Without our really knowing in those days, it's just, just do. And then after that, we thought, because of that, you can get into the thought, no thought. Then you can understand the three characteristics.
Yeah.
That is the crux of the Buddhist teaching.
Yes.
The anicca, dukkha, and anatta. So we have a lot to thank you for in this growing years. And I hope everybody will put in work, because I think I put in a lot of effort.
If not,
I would not even have gotten there at all.
Yes. A lot of faith. Then a lot of virya, then a lot of perseverance and effort to actually come to where you are. And you change a lot, Julia, my nature rejoices. Because of your understanding, you become very different. And just now what you share is very true. The crux of the matter is these teachings are not easy to come by. That's why even Yun Chan also came to realize, because earlier on he thought all these things I share is like repeating. No, it's not repeating. It has not gone in. We are the real one that have the true understanding, that has received. They share differently. They develop gratitude, contentment, like what you have now. You have gratitude. That's why you advise people to thank. Although you may say, thank my nature for bringing this understanding out, which is very true. But you must also understand, without your affinity with the Triple Gem, with the Buddha Dhamma and the Sangha and all the great beings' nature and your past condition, we can never meet. And even if we meet, you may not understand the teaching. So you must have your past good parami, good affinity with the Triple Gem. That's how all this become possible. So all Kayamita should have that understanding. Even when you listen and develop the understanding through my nature and my sharing, it because this is the condition, my time, my duty, my vow, the mission for my this form and mind to come this time around is to do this. So my nature do what it's supposed to do. But in future, your time will come. Other Kayamita's time will come. And they will also go this way and share with the world, just like all our predecessors, Sama Sambuddha, all the great beings. This is what they are doing. So as we cultivate, we develop understanding, then when our time comes, it is for us to actually start the sharing, and we will do all this. That's how my nature comes through all this cultivation, evolution, perfection. Then this life, when it has the condition, it decides to come. And when it decides to come, those creeping up there, they know who are the one that can do this work. That's why in 1986, Kuan Yin's nature came. Then I was told to move. With the triple gem on my hand, he said, not much time left. You had to move fast. I just woke up and understood the message. That's why from then onward, I never waste my time anymore. I went into it full time. That time I was still working. Then within 3 years, 86, 89, the book come, the guide come, the teacher come, everything come. I didn't do anything technically, but I was very diligent, full of faith, and I just cultivate. Then everything just fall into place. That's why after 1989, my nature connect back and develop the understanding. Then after that, the transformation happened. Then that time I was too early. I developed this understanding too early, and human beings were not ready. So for 15 years, I never do anything until Yun Chan come along in 2004. Then after when I started in 2004, like I said, the five degree of one, people still don't have that understanding. They still cannot follow. So I have to reverse back the teaching. I have to go back to basic. Four noble truths, three turning, five degree essential dhamma. I have to start all over again. Then explaining to people what is a phenomenon. Then the three type of phenomena, the universe. So step by step, all these things has to be taught. Otherwise, it cannot go in. Then what is the silent mind? Until later on, the unique code came out, only people understand. Before that, only a few, handful understand. Like Hengbi, they all, Miss D, they all, Alicia, and Song, and all these people. Then later on, when the MCO start, again, great transformation. In fact, before the MCO start was the Bodhisattva way that Padmasri they all requested. Then all those supposed to help also, they came in at the right time. It meant to be the condition that my daughter also came back at the right time. Everything fall into place. Then, as you all know, my house, I never intend to have any image on. Then the image just come. Everything just come. Even Srihan's house also, the Rupang also come. Nobody planned for it. And everything just happened. You can ask Srihan and me for when those who were with us witnessing the installation of that Rupang. So it was so beautiful. So all this, you should have gratitude and thank your own good karma and all the kayamitas who has made all this possible. We should rejoice and thank them. Because everyone play their role for what ever that arise to happen. Because there are causes and conditions behind. As long as you are part of that movement, your whatever contribution matters. Because without you, the world will not be what it is today. And without the world, you will not be what you are today. So one is all is one. So the understanding become very different. Then we have this love, compassion arising from our nature through this understanding. Without this understanding, that real compassion, gratitude, contentment, joy, understanding cannot unfold, cannot arise. It's because of all this that it can unfold, it can arise. So it's very beautiful. So sadhu again, Chui, for the good condition and the sharing.
All due to you. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Also, all of those who help out and all the affinity that you all have with the Triple Gem, all this come together. Otherwise, all this cannot happen. So, sadhu. So now, maybe we will end the first session. We are 6:07 already. Yeah. So we will do the sharing of merits, transform merits, then make the aspiration. Then after that, we can have fellowship for about 5 to 10 minutes. Okay. So once again, rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And we should thank Sister Chui and Alicia for the good condition and the sharing today. Tammy, you want to share your good news with other people or not? Tammy, yes. This is the opportunity for you to share the good news. You can break that good news to all Kayamita. Sadhu for you. Congratulations. Yes.
I just want to tell Varadio and all the Kayamita that I just got registered.
Sadhu. Yeah, congratulations, Tammy. Yeah. And the date is very auspicious, 18th of March, 2021. So when she texted me this morning, I congratulated her. Then I saw her now with us sharing. Maybe this is a good time to announce that good news so that all Kayamita can rejoice. Sadhu. Sadhu.
I can introduce him to y'all.
Yeah, can. Yeah.
And you have house gathering that time.
No problem, Sadhu.
Listen to Brother Teo also.
Sadhu. Yeah, rejoice. I saw that photo, the registration photo. Actually, my son also did it last year November. Registered also. Cannot have celebration. Also did the registration. We did at Tian Ho Kung. Where did you all do? Perkawinan, is it? Pendaftaran, pendaftaran. Okay, that one is the government.
Just behind my house.
Right? Very convenient. Yeah. 5 minutes, very convenient. Congratulations. Yeah. Is there anything else you want to say or share, Tammy? What about today's sharing from Chui?
Today sharing, I mean, we catch on the 5 aggregates.
Yes.
It's really like, you know, even though my cultivation is not that good, but lately I do have some, mostly every day I have meditation like more than half an hour.
Sadhu. Very good. Relax, maintain awareness.
Sometimes they will have thoughts. You know?
Never mind, let it arise. Then it will slow down and it will finally cease. Then you will experience the shift in consciousness. The mind becomes like very quiet suddenly. And that is the silent mind. That is your awareness nature. But initially, one moment only that glimpse, then the thought comes in already. Gone. So never mind, be patient. Allow it to happen more and more. Then one day, when it happens and become very stable, you will know. Your nature will know. Then you realize you have become different. You have more space, more clarity, less thinking. And for that to happen means you have heard enough of the Dhamma. You have straightened some of your view. You have developed the right view to accept the reality of the moment. Unless cultivator can do that, they can never have the silent mind. They are not easy unless you have your past. You calm this life, you know how to cultivate. Like my nature, I calm, I don't need anybody to teach me what this thing is. Then when I attend meditation, people teach me all sorts of method technique. I never want to do it because for me, I just relax, maintain awareness. I know how to silent my mind. Then the anapanasati that time just come very naturally. Then after anapanasati come, my nature know how to develop it until it become very still, very relaxed and very quiet, until like no more breathing. Then the mind starts to enter sati. That's why all this nobody taught me. Even until today, there is no teacher to teach me to do this. Even the book doesn't teach until that extent. But then I came to understand them all myself. Then later on, when the connection came through and the awakening happened, then my nature starts to develop the inheritance of my past cultivation. That's how I understand all this. Then when my past cultivation come back, then a lot of things I never learned this life, I start to understand why I have the understanding. How come I can share all this and teach all this? It's because in the past, my nature has developed them, cultivated them, perfected them. That's why when I come this life, I know there is a karmic nature, there is a spiritual nature. No book talk about it. Then I can understand the unconditioned, that nature. That one, you really need those great beings with that cultivation to explain to me. Because normal people cannot even understand what that thing is. Cannot even touch that silent mind. Cannot even realize a glimpse of what that silent mind is. That's why it's so difficult. So to stabilize that and to go in and to realize that you have two minds, that itself is not easy. That's why the real cultivation is not easy. And what is being taught is always book knowledge, Dhamma knowledge, thought-based. So that's why when I have the understanding in 1989, I was reluctant to share, because what I came to realize and understand is the total opposite of what the Buddhist community do. Most people, the teaching they teach is so different, the book they write, also different. So I was quite reluctant to share. Just like the Buddha, at first, after his enlightenment, you remember? He had this thought. He said, this is so profound. How can people understand? Then he decided not to teach, not to share. Then Sahampati, the Brahma, can read his thought, came down respectfully, circumvent around him and pay the respect and said, please, omniscient one, there are some with little dust in their eye who can understand you. You must share this understanding. And then he reflected and contemplated the two teachers. Then he checked, he realized they passed away already. One of them passed away 1 week ago, the other one the night before. So it's meant to be. Then he checked again. Then he remembered the five ascetics were with him together. I said, yeah, these people, they can understand it. So he walked all the way to see them. Then the rest is history. That's how Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta come about, the three turning. That was his first teaching. That's why his first teaching, he already emphasized on the Four Noble Truths and his three turning, the 12 aspects. Then from there, all the essential Dhamma arise. So that is the beauty of his teaching. That's why his Four Noble Truths, the three turning, is the essence of his teaching. And when you penetrate that, you penetrate the whole teaching.
Father, I got one question.
Yes, you can ask.
I found that the heart area, I don't know whether is it I sit wrongly or something. The heart area is like when I breathe, it's quite hard to breathe.
Oh, okay. You describe someone, I know how to answer you. You will benefit, yeah. And then what else? Hard to breathe and what else?
And then I go, and then it will come out.
Yeah, because your thought, you try to use your thought to do something. No need. That's why what you forget is relax. When you are not relaxed, all these things will happen. Because your thought come in and interfere. Your thought want to know. Then your thought, when it is there, it will make you stressed. You will not be able to be in that relaxed state. But that relaxed state is very important. The relaxed state is your natural state when the mundane mind doesn't arise. When the mundane mind doesn't arise, your true mind will surface. But your true mind cannot surface because you want to know, understand or not? Then your thought is the one that creates the fear. that you try to breathe, because you think if you don't breathe, you may not be normal. But no, the final true mind actually doesn't breathe. That's why the breathing, the anapanasati become very subtle, and like no more breathing. Then like everything starts to become so subtle, like everything ceases. Then later on, the pure awareness alone remain. And that is your nature. That one got nothing to do with the physical body. Well, that one is the nature. But that nature is connected to your form and mind because of karma. Without this form and mind, vehicle and tool, it cannot connect. So what you need to understand is relax. Relax. When you relax, you don't force your mind to go to the heart area. That's why initially you relax and maintain awareness to be aware enough ready. Somewhere around your heart area also can. If your object of meditation is anapanasati, you just go there. If it's rising, falling, you just silence everything and just go there. Then let your mind, the silent mind, become aware of the phenomena that is moving around there. Like anapanasati, or the rising and falling, or whatever movement, it will pick it up. Then just let things be silent, maintain awareness. Aware, finish. Aware, finish. Don't try to know. Don't try to like recall, oh, am I doing it correctly? Is that what Brother Teo said? Don't. Just relax. Relax means fang song. You know Mandarin, isn't it? Fang song. So when you allow yourself to be naturally relaxed, what happens is the mundane mind will slow down and return to its natural state, which is silent, the true mind. The silent mind is your true mind before the thought arises, before sankara activity arises, before the mind stir and react. So you have to realize that state, which is your original state, before the stirring, before the thinking. But initially you can't, because you don't have stability or daily mindfulness. Your spiritual faculty is not stable. So throughout the day, when you live your life, you are not heedful. You are not mindful. Your sense experience, you still react and stir. Maybe now it has become slightly less. I won't say grossly reduced, slightly less, because you still don't have the ability to be relaxed and maintain awareness to experience the silent mind leading to the stability of that nature, awareness nature, to develop the daily mindfulness. So you need to continue to relax, maintain awareness, and don't try to know. Forget about the breathing difficulty, just relax. When you are relaxed, it's like when you are in deep sleep. Without any conscious knowing, you are very relaxed and you will have good sleep, especially when you are tired. So relax means like when you are very tired, you just like, you know, when you are very tired, it's like you want to just sleep. You just let go of this like tiredness and just like relax into it. And then it slowly will bring forth the condition for all your whatever bodily cells, yeah, and all those movement activity, they will start to slow down and return to their quiet state. Because when there is no stress, no thinking, no fear, no worry, no emotion, when the mind doesn't interfere with the body becomes very quiet. It will heal itself, because that nature's energy, which is the life force, when it comes in, if there is no thought, the mundane thinking or the emotion or the fear, worry, anxiety to actually oppose it, then it will heal you. It will go around all your organs. Then it will heal you. That's why meditation leads to recuperation, recovery. It's because of that. You just relax, maintain awareness. And then, when your thought process doesn't come in, it will not interfere with the life force energy. then the life force energy is the one that will actually stabilize your breathing, everything, your heartbeat, everything. Then your high blood pressure all gone. Yeah. That's why I never have BP problem since birth until now. My BP is, blood pressure is always regular because I know how to relax and maintain awareness. Then let it happen. After a while, you will understand all this. Then you will understand your body very well. Then when the thought never interfere, that is the best. That is the time where your sati is very stable. Your spiritual faculty will come back to you. Then meditation becomes very simple. Like a lot of people now know how to meditate. They just relax, maintain awareness. Straight away they go into that silent mind. And even Poching, they are all able to do it. And even Song, Alicia, they are in India. Many of them, they know how to relax and maintain awareness. Especially in the morning when you wake up, meditate. That one is very good. The chipping of the birds, everything becomes very clear, the whole nature becomes very clear. Then you are just like the silent awareness within. There is aware. Then you understand what phenomena is, because through the senses it arises. Then all of the teaching becomes very clear to you. After that consciousness arrives, how your mundane mind with its views, opinion and cognition, how it wants to input the content, you can see. Then when you are able to understand all this, when you don't want to do anything, then you see it arise, it cease, it arise, it cease. And then that nature become more and more stable, until finally everything becomes very quiet. Then when you are able to be in that state long enough, then the spacious awareness without a center will come in. Then you become like one with the environment, one with the oneness nature. Then your nature becomes suddenly very sensitive, like you can perceive everything, there is clarity. Then whatever that arises through the senses, the phenomenal, you can see them, you can perceive them. You want to know, you can know. You don't want to know, you just allow it to arise, like arise, finish, arise, finish. Sometimes no need to perceive also. Upon contact, cease. Upon contact, cease. Then sometimes you can stay at the mind base. The whole life force will go into your nature. It will not arise. Otherwise, it will arise through your conscious mind, through your senses. Then it create thinking. It create all the moods, the emotion, the sakara activity. So a lot of life force, very, very precious life force, is wasted in the thinking, in the thought process, in the emotion and all those things. Then you realize when you conserve your energy means you don't think, you don't do anything. So without thought, you become very quiet, very calm, very peaceful, like you have a good sleep, deep sleep, and you recuperate very fast. So this is what can happen. Okay, thank you for your good question. Tell me to go back and listen to it. So once again, congratulations. I think we should end late already, 6:27 already. So yes, let us rejoice. You want to say something, Tammy? Yeah.
I don't want to say that when you are telling me how to do it, the whole body like vibrate.
Yeah, the vibration is the beginning of your awareness coming up. Otherwise, you cannot feel the vibration. Yes. Without the help of anything, like the doctor need to use the stethoscope, without that, you can feel your own heartbeat, your own bodily vibration. That is your awareness. Without the awareness, you can't. That's why you must silence your mind to be sensitive at that place. Wherever you locate your mind, if it can sense the vibration, that is your awareness. Other things cannot. Only the awareness can. It can go to any part within your brain as long as there is blood there, then it can be aware.
Sadhu, sadhu,
sadhu, sadhu.